It's Central Time. I'm Judith Sears Bussong.
And I'm Rob Ferret. You're with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up, the Wisconsin survey results are out, and almost half of Wisconsinites surveyed say the state economy is not looking so good. We'll look at the results with an economist.
First, New York voters headed to the polls yesterday in the latest round of presidential primaries, and former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton and businessman Donald Trump walked away victorious.
In this campaign, we've won in every region of the country. From the north to the south to the east to the west, but this one's personal.
We're going to celebrate for about 2 hours. Then early in the morning, I get up and we begin working again. Thank you, everybody. And thank you, New York. We love New York.
Both candidates called New York home. Pollsters not too surprised that they emerged on top, though the margins were maybe bigger than expected.
But allegations of voting discrepancies are dogging the candidates following their victories in the state.
And now New York is down. Pennsylvania is on the horizon. The candidates are ramping up campaigns as state contests become fewer and fewer.
Joining us now, as he does every Wednesday, to talk about U.S. politics is Harry Enten. He's a senior political writer and analyst for 538.com. Harry, welcome back to Central Time.
Thanks for having me back.
So let's start broadly with those New York primaries we're talking about. How was voter turnout?
Not fantastic. In fact, it was among one of the lowest in the nation so far. That's not a huge surprise because both candidates were expected to win by large margins, both Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump. But obviously, you prefer to have larger turnout. But to be honest, if you look at the polls, I'm not quite sure a larger turnout really would have made much of a difference. I mean, the margins were so huge that both Trump and Clinton would have won easily.
Let's look at that margin on the Democratic side. Hillary Clinton's win was predicted by polls in New York. She's been winning in states with large delegate counts, including now New York. Does this pretty much put it away, Harry? Is the mathematical path to a Bernie Sanders victory really far out of reach now?
I thought it was out of reach before last night, but at least you could say, hey, look, these national polls are closing, and maybe then that can translate to the state level. But, you know, New York came in 16-point win for Hillary Clinton. You look ahead to next week, Pennsylvania, Maryland, two other big delegate prizes, and Clinton holds double-digit leads there. If you just look at the elected delegate count, Clinton has a lead of somewhere in the neighborhood of about 245 right now. That's far larger than Barack Obama ever had when he was facing off against Hillary Clinton. And the fact is, as you look forward to the states that are voting in the future, in the next few weeks, that pledged delegate lead is likely to grow. I just don't see it unless there is something that happens, unless she gets indicted, which will not happen. She's got this thing locked up as far as I'm concerned.
So Hillary Clinton's opponent, Senator Bernie Sanders, flew home to Vermont yesterday after he lost to Hillary Clinton in New York. Here's what he had to say to reporters in his home state.
While I congratulate Secretary Clinton, I must say that I am really concerned about the conduct of the voting process in New York State. And I hope that that process will change in the future.
So, Harry, what is the controversy surrounding the voting process that Bernie Sanders was referring to?
I think what he's really getting at is that New York State has a closed primary, and that is that you need to be a registered Democrat to vote in the Democratic primary. But more than that, the deadline to switch from being, say, an independent or a Republican to vote in the Democratic primary is all the way back in October, which is the longest or most restricted stretch. But this should not be a surprise to the Sanders campaign. This is a law that has been on the books for well over 30 years now, more than 40 years, actually, I believe. And it's a law that, if anything, helps to increase the voting power of African Americans, which, to be honest, as far as I'm concerned, is not necessarily a bad thing. But I think that there is going to be some discussion going forward as to whether or not, even if you have a closed primary in New York, maybe you should make the deadline for switching from being an independent to a Democrat to say something more manageable than all the way back in October.
And people have pointed to claims from some people that they had filed to switch to a party by the deadline and then got notified that no, they hadn't officially. And then some people have raised concerns in Brooklyn, I think it was, where a lot of active voters were moved to the inactive list. Did any of these things have much of an impact on what happened yesterday?
Not really. I mean, look, if we're going to be honest here, I think there's always some some conspiracy theorists to say, see, that's that, there it is, it's something. Fact is that these are people, many of them, who try their hardest, but it's very difficult to run an election. You see that in caucuses all the time, where you see parties try and throw them together, and then they're a mess with these long lines. Even the professionals have a very difficult time doing so. I don't think there was any, you know, idea that that people were going to try and do something bad, but I think that obviously sometimes some voters got left off. But look, Hillary Clinton won by a very large margin yesterday. She won by over 16 percentage points in a very large state, over 200,000 votes. These things might have mattered on the margins, but Hillary Clinton was going to win that primary no matter what.
So, Harry, what does it say about New York voters that Bernie Sanders didn't do better in New York when he's coming off a pretty significant surge of momentum?
I think that there are a few things. Number one, I think that this race really has come down to demographics and not, you know, momentum per se. That is that Hillary Clinton voters look and act a certain way and Bernie Sanders voters act and look a certain way. So that in New York, for example, it's a very high African-American vote in the Democratic primaries, a very high Latino vote, and a very high wealthy white vote. And those are groups that have traditionally been very, very good for Hillary Clinton. And so it wasn't a big surprise as the ground shifted from, say, a state like Wisconsin, which doesn't very many African-American voters on the Democratic side, or a lot of Latino voters, and the white population is not nearly as wealthy, to switch from there to go to New York, where all of those things switched. It doesn't really surprise me that Hillary Clinton walked away with a 16-point win when she lost by double digits in Wisconsin.
Talking to Harry Enten from 538.com about the national political scene, yesterday's primary results in particular. I want to turn to the Republican side for a bit here, Harry. Donald Trump, again, expected to win, but he did better, I think, than projected on the delegate count. How well did he do?
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, I think sometimes I have a bias perhaps of downplaying how well Donald Trump did. He did very, very well last night. Look, he got over 60% of the vote. I don't care what state that is. That's a very good job. In terms of the delegates, there were 95 at stake. I thought he was going to get somewhere in the low to mid-80s. He's going to end up with something about 90 of the 95 delegates. So clearly he outperformed what we thought he was going to do. But we shouldn't make too much of it. Again, it was his home state. The turnout wasn't that great. It'll be interesting to see as we go forward whether or not this is the start of something new. But, you know, I think the real story here in New York is that Ted Cruz, who did very well in Wisconsin, came in third with a little less than 15% of the vote. He just does not play in the Northeast at all. And that's a big problem going into next week when we have a lot of Northeast states that are going to be voting.
So, Harry, is it looking at this point with what you said about Ted Cruz's lack of appeal in the part of the country where there's going to be a lot of voting going on? Is this the point where Donald Trump just pulls ahead permanently?
No, I mean, again, you know, as it is on the Democratic side, demographics have played a large role on the Republican side. And once we shift away after next week, where Donald Trump should again do well, though I wouldn't be surprised, let's not forget the third person in this race, John Kasich. John Kasich picking up a few delegates in and around the Washington, D.C. area in the Maryland primary, and then perhaps up in Connecticut where there's a lot of wealthy white voters. But once those primaries end next week, the ground will again shift to the Midwest and to the West, where Ted Cruz should do significantly better in states like Indiana, Washington, and Oregon.
Let's look at the big picture math here, Harry. Trump overperformed, as you said, a little bit. His path to that, 1,237 delegates still exists. Ted Cruz doesn't really have a path there anymore, does he?
No, I mean, if the Cruz campaign was being honest with itself, I don't think that they really, for a while now, have had a path to 1,237 on a first ballot. That doesn't mean he can't win because you get to a second, third ballot, so on and so forth. But right now, the real question, as it's been for the last few weeks, is whether or not Donald Trump can reach 1,237 delegates on the first ballot. Last night really didn't help clarify that. I think the first test of that will be in the Indiana primary in a few weeks.
Talking to Harry Enten from 538.com, looking at national politics and yesterday's New York presidential primary and the road ahead. He's a senior political writer and analyst for 538.com.
And we want to hear from you. Are you surprised at yesterday's results? As the voting continues, do you see yourself shifting allegiances or are you standing by your candidate? Give us a call at 800-642-1234. Again, that number, 800-642-1234. You can also leave a comment on the Central Time Facebook page or send us an email at talk@wpr.org.
You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Judith Sears Poisson. Right now, we're continuing our conversation about the New York presidential primary with Harry Enten. He's a senior political writer and analyst for 538.com.
We're getting his analysis, and we'd like to hear your analysis of what happened yesterday in New York, the road ahead, what you see happening in the general election. Are you happy with the results from New York? Call now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also share your thoughts on the Central Time Facebook page. Let's bring in a caller. We've got Rick on the line in Racine. Rick, hi, you're on the air.
Hi. I'm wondering what the guest thinks of the, I guess New York is a microcosm of what's going to be happening. It's a closed primary. And so a lot of the independent voters, whether intentionally, unintentionally, confusion, whatever, weren't able to vote for what candidate they thought would be best for them. And how does that, you know, fare for down the road for voter, for the candidates such as Bernie Sanders, Donald Trump? Are the independents really going to swing this a lot after the convention?
Rick, thanks a lot. Interesting point. So where do the independents swing in a general election, Harry? And I imagine it depends on who the two major party candidates are.
Exactly. I mean, look, if the two major party candidates are Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump, most of the polling shows that self-identified independents will vote for Hillary Clinton. But I should point out that, remember, in 2012, Mitt Romney won self-identified independents in the exit polls and still lost the general election by 4 percentage points. There are more self-identified Democrats than there are self-identified Republicans in this country. And so as long as Hillary Clinton is able to run up a margin with self-identified Democrats and doesn't get blown out with self-identified independents, then she is going to win in the general. We'll see, though, of course, whether or not independents, the way independents vote in the primaries, is really all that predictive of how they'll vote in the actual general election. I'm a little suspicious of that.
Well, Hillary Clinton did reach out to Sanders supporters in her victory speech yesterday. This is what she had to say.
It's humbling that you'd trust me with the awesome responsibilities that await our next president. And to all the people who supported Senator Sanders, I believe there is much more that unites us than divides us.
Sanders supporters have been pretty adamant overall about him as their candidate. What's the likelihood, Harry, that people would switch to Hillary Clinton if she ends up being the Democratic nominee?
I mean, if you look at the exit polls and you look at the polls, generally speaking, not all of the Sanders supporters are going to go out and support Hillary Clinton, but the vast majority of them are. I mean, just go back to 8 years ago when you had a much, much more volatile, much more hard-fought Democratic primary, and you had all these Clinton supporters saying, yeah, we'll never support Barack Obama, and then, of course, pretty much all of them did. So if I were Hillary Clinton, obviously you don't want to alienate them. I think that she input a good strategy last night. But I think once the Republican candidate is chosen and it's a matchup between Hillary Clinton and, say, Donald Trump, I don't think very many Sanders supporters are going to look at themselves and go, you know what, I think I'm going to support Donald Trump. I think most of them are going to go with Hillary Clinton.
Well, same question, other party. If the candidate is not Donald Trump on the Republican side, do Trump fans switch to the other Republican? Do they sit it out? On the other hand, you know, the Stop Trump movement, can they rally around Donald Trump if he's the nominee? We just heard Scott Walker saying, yeah, he did try to participate in the Stop Trump effort, but he says he'd support the Republican nominee.
Yeah, I mean, again, on the Republican side, I wouldn't be surprised if there's a little more leakage of support for whomever the eventual nominee is, maybe getting a little less of the Republican vote than the average Republican normally would in a normal year. But even there, you know, you have this Never Trump movement, and there are some people who are aligned with it, some elected officials, but most Republicans, I think, at the end of the day, are going to rally around whoever the Republican nominee is, because let's just face it, there's just no way that most Republicans could ever vote for Hillary Clinton.
Talking with Harry Enten, senior political writer and analyst for 538.com. And you can join the conversation by calling 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. And let's go to Dan in Germantown. Hi, Dan.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
Well, I just wanted to say, I'm the next New Yorker. I've been out here in Wisconsin for 20 years, and I was thrilled to come out here to find open primaries. When I was in New York, I'm a registered independent, have been for decades. And I was shut out in New York. As many people, tens of thousands, I assume, were shut out this time around, too. If you hadn't registered to be Democratic or Republican by October 1st, you're out of this primary. If you're an independent, you're out of this primary, past primaries, future primaries. Personally, I think maybe there ought to be something a little more equitable so that all voters can actually vote in all primaries. And I don't know that the state should necessarily be able to set their own rules. And New York State is one of the most restrictive primaries in the entire country.
Thanks for that call, Dan. And Harry, what do you think of what Dan says?
I mean, there's certainly an argument for open primaries. I will say that the Supreme Court has upheld the closed primary system in New York, so it's established law. There's nothing illegal about it. But I think that there's certainly, right now we have a good mix in this country of primaries, caucuses, open primaries, closed primaries. And I'm not necessarily sure that's such a bad thing. It gives voice to different people, as I said. The people who are most likely to be registered Democrats versus, registered independents in a Democratic primary are African Americans. And I'm not necessarily sure that the leading bloc within the Democratic primary, I don't think it's a bad idea that maybe they get more of a voice in some primaries than they do in others.
Thanks for that call, Dan, at 800-642-1234. Staying with the primary system, here's Donald Trump. He's said sometimes recently, after losing some states like Wisconsin, he's saying the GOP race is rigged. Here he is last night in his victory speech.
Nobody should be given delegates, which is a ticket to victory, and it's not a fair ticket. And even though we're leading by a lot and we can't be caught, it's impossible to catch us. Nobody should take delegates and claim victory unless they get those delegates with voters and voting.
So it sounds like, in a way, Harry, Donald Trump is turning toward the likely contested convention, making his case that whoever came in with the most delegates, as awarded by voters, should win. No delegate swiping.
I mean, there's two wars that are going on the Republican side. There's the delegate war, and that's Ted Cruz is winning, going into these state conventions and assuring that these delegates, even if they have to vote for Trump on the first ballot, are going to vote for Cruz on a second ballot. And there's the PR war. And the PR war is one in which Trump is saying that the game is rigged. And you know what? I don't think he's doing a bad job at the PR war. I mean, that is his game, isn't it? So I disagree with Trump saying that the game is rigged. But we'll see what voters have to say, because if there was going to be a lot of pressure if Donald Trump has a plurality of delegates, which he will going into the convention, especially if he is just short of 1,237, for those unpledged delegates to line up behind Trump and give him the nomination.
So Ohio Governor John Kasich has had weak voter turnout throughout the campaign, except for winning his home state of Ohio, but he did walk away with four delegates in New York's primary, and he's saying that he is in it to the end. Why do you think he performed better in New York compared to Senator Ted Cruz, and should he still be in the race at this point, Harry?
I mean, if he can be in the race as long as he wants to be in the race. The reason he did better than Ted Cruz was because voters in New York who perhaps were put off by Donald Trump or looking for an alternative, and they were simply just not going to vote for a social conservative in a socially liberal state like New York. I mean, look, where John Kasich did well was, for instance, in the city of Manhattan. And I spoke with one person who was a Kasich supporter who instead wanted Mike Bloomberg. Yes, that Mike Bloomberg who wanted to ban sodas to be the Republican nominee. So Kasich appeals very much so to these more socially liberal voters who happen to be registered Republicans in the Northeast. And that's why I expect him to pick up some delegates next week when, again, we'll be having more votes being taken place in the Northeast.
Yeah, Ted Cruz seemed to be electoral poison in New York. In fact, Republican Congressman Peter King, who said he was voting for Kasich, not endorsing, but voting for Kasich, said if Cruz is the nominee, he would take cyanide. I think being rhetorical there. But is there a state coming up that Ted Cruz should be focusing on where he has a shot to gain some delegate ground?
I think, next week there are two states where I'm sort of keeping my eye on. One is obviously Rhode Island, which is proportional. So as long as Ted Cruz gets 10% of the vote or more there, he'll pick up some delegates. And the other one is Pennsylvania, where although Cruz might not be able to win, All 54 of the delegates that are assigned by district are unpledged. So if Cruz can go in there and win over those unpledged delegates one by one by one, then he can accrue a lot of delegates in the state of Pennsylvania.
And Harry, what do you see going into these next primaries that are on the calendar on both sides? Do you see any change in messaging either in the front runners or in their challengers?
I think on the Democratic side, Bernie Sanders is going to have a choice, and that choice is going to be whether or not he decides to take on a message that's perhaps a little less negative than he had in New York. Hillary Clinton has a clear lead, and the more you go negative on her, the better chance she has of losing the general election. So that's one thing I'm watching. On the Republican side, I think whether or not Donald Trump acts more presidential, Paul Manafort, who he brought on to be pretty much his campaign manager, has made some adjustments with Trump. Let's see if Trump can act like a front runner instead of a reality TV show star.
We'll see if he does that by next week, Wednesday. Harry, thanks for joining us.
It's going to be hard. Have a good one.
That's Harry Enten, senior political writer and analyst for 538.com. He joins us every week at this time to talk about what's happening in national politics.
Coming up after the news, we'll talk to an economist about the spring 2016 Wisconsin survey results. I'm Judith Sears-Poisson.
And I'm Rob Farah. This is Central Time here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.
You're listening to Central Time. I'm Judith Sears-Poisson.
And I'm Rob Ferret. Up next, Harriet Tubman is set to replace Andrew Jackson on the $20 bill. Our guest tells us why and when we might be able to get our hands on the new currency.
First, Wisconsin survey results came out today from the St. Norbert College Strategic Research Institute, Wisconsin Public Television, and Wisconsin Public Radio. The survey comes out twice a year to gauge the opinions and attitudes of Wisconsinites on a range of topics, like state policy issues and upcoming elections.
The spring 2016 survey polled 616 registered Wisconsin voters over mobile and landline phones about the upcoming election this November, whether they think the nation and state are headed in the right direction, and policy issues like immigration and the vacancy in the U.S. Supreme Court.
We're taking your calls now as we zero in on what survey respondents had to say about the economy. How would you rate the national economy? What about Wisconsin's economy? Are you better off financially than you were a year ago? Do you expect to be better off at this time next year? How much opportunity is there for the average person to get ahead in the United States? You can call in now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post your thoughts on the Central Time Facebook page.
Nancy Wong is with us now to break down these survey results. She's a professor of consumer science in the School of Human Ecology at UW-Madison. Nancy, welcome back to Central Time.
Hello, hi.
Well, let's start with how respondents rated national economic conditions here in the United States. The plurality of people, 44%, had a negative view, not so good, a 33% positive, the rest in the middle, not sure. So generally, a plurality of people pessimistic about the national economy. Why do you think that perception is out there?
Well, as I think what was discussed earlier, it has to do with the, I think, current, upcoming election, because consumer sentiments are really quite sensitive to what is being reported in popular media. And as the election campaigns heat up, candidates tend to emphasize the negatives and focus on what is wrong with the economy and promote how they would change things if they are elected. So since income inequality and economic outlook has pretty much dominated every single political debate, it is really not surprising that people feel that things are not going too well. So I would say that it is a natural reaction to all the negative campaigns out there.
Yeah, you study, you research consumer perception a lot. Is mm-hmm. How much, when we do a survey like this, how much do you think it's connected to economic reality, what's really happening, and how much of it is just perception, what people are seeing, what people are hearing?
Unfortunately, I guess there is really, what's the word for it? There can be a disconnect between what is reality and what is being perceived. And the perception is very much dependent on the personal characteristics and the individual background. For example, I think in our research, it actually shows that gender plays a role. Men are more optimistic about the economic outlook than women are in general. And education level also plays a role in that the more educated naturally are more optimistic about their ability to do better as the economy changes. So those are the two primary factors. And immigrants are also more optimistic than native born Americans.
That's interesting. I imagine if they might have come from a place where the economy was demonstrably worse than the United States, so no matter what's going up and down in the U.S. economy, it still might look better than their past experience? Is that
part of
that?
Absolutely, yes. I think that is probably the strongest indicator of that, yes.
I wanted to ask you about uncertainty. If people feel uncertain about the economy, whatever it's doing right now, and that might happen during a presidential election or after, say, a big recession, is that part of what clouds people's vision of the economic future?
That could also be part of the explanation, although I don't think our research did not, look into specifically about uncertainty, but I think psychological uncertainty and, the swings in the economy in terms of commodity prices, oil prices, everything could play a role, unfortunately.
We're talking to Nancy Wong from UW-Madison. She's a professor of consumer science. We've got new results out from the WPT St. Norbert College survey, the Wisconsin survey. Looking at the results of what Wisconsinites had to say about the state of the economy, national, state economy, personal finances for that matter, you can join in with your thoughts at 800-642-1234. Are you hopeful or fearful about the next year for the nation's economy, for Wisconsin's economy, for your household's economy? 800-642-1234 is the number to call. You can also go to the Central Time Facebook page, find a link to the full survey information there. Nancy, turning to Wisconsin, now a little dimmer view of our economy here. 49% of survey respondents rated the state economy as not being so good. Mm-hmm. That's up 5 percentage points from the fall, the last time we did this survey.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think would swing people to be pessimistic at the state level when it comes to the economy?
Well, I think it's, first of all, I don't think that 5% change is really a significant enough difference to say that it has changed a great deal. But at the same time, I think, this has also been consistent with the historical trend, I think, within, prior to an election, and you would actually likely to see an increase in optimism right after the election. So I think that is fitting with the historical pattern. But I think at the same time, it is also fair to say that I think Wisconsinites have reason to feel somewhat gloomy about the economy, because the real economic, I think, statistics and the data have shown that we are really not doing quite so well. So I think from that standpoint, maybe we are actually realistic in our perception.
Right. And this is more of a political point, but there have been duels, arguments over which data we should look at.
Mm-hmm.
Often supporters of the governor saying, look, we have unemployment levels lower than the rest of the country. The governor's critics saying we have job creation statistics that are worse than the rest of the country and wages aren't looking so good. Is it a matter of which numbers we look at?
It is, and also who we're comparing ourselves to, unfortunately. And I mean, judging it from, I guess Wisconsin actually sits pretty much like right in the middle of this country. So if you compare to the top half of the economies or counties that are doing better in this country, we are worse off. Compared to the bottom half of the country, we're definitely better off.
Well, now we've talked about the national results here, the state results. I want to get into personal results. Now, we asked people in this poll, are you better off financially now than you were a year ago? And we really had a split in the results this time. 36% of respondents said, hey, we're better off now than a year ago. 36%, the same number, said we're the same. And the rest, a good number there, said worse. So how do people... I mean, if people say, I don't know, I've got the same job I had a year ago, doing okay, nothing bad's happened, is mm-hmm. that generally lead to a positive perception of how we're doing?
Right, I think so. Because I think on balance, people actually feel that they are more or less in a holding pattern. You know, if you look at the percentage of people who say that they are maybe not as well, better off compared to last year, and those who are actually... are better off than last year, I think they actually average out to people who are saying that, well, it hasn't really changed. So, and I think it's also very much, unfortunately, in any kind of surveys, it's very much dependent on who responded to this survey. And if you were to look at the respondent profile on this particular survey, 80% of them have some college or technical college training, and at least 50% of them have college or postgraduate degrees. So it is actually not surprising that they are more optimistic about their personal finances than how, you know, they see the rest of the state's economy, because they happen to be coming from, I would say, the more privileged group of people.
Mm. And 43%, and this may connect to that too, said, hey, we expect to be better off financially a year from now. So optimism among this group. And again, that may be because of the profile of the people who responded.
Mm-hmm. Yes, definitely.
I wonder, this was of registered voters, because a lot of the survey was about elections and politics and things like that. So I wonder if limiting that to registered voters might have overrepresented those groups. Interesting point maybe about the survey methodology there.
Yes, that I think it is probably true, because I think traditionally that these are the groups of people who are much more, I think, likely to be politically active and to be voting to begin with.
Now, a question I have, you again look at how consumers think, what motivates them. A big thing economists watch for is consumer confidence. Are people feeling comfortable enough with the economy that they're willing to spend money, to buy stuff, thus boosting the economy? What goes into that kind of decision?
Definitely. I think, you know, I think one of the key decisions is looking at, you know, maybe the volatility of the interest rates and mortgage rates and gas prices. And all those, I think, changes have been on the positive side lately, in the sense that I think things are looking better. So I think that goes a long way in contributing to people's, I think, confidence level.
We're talking to economist Nancy Wong about what Wisconsinites had to say about the economy in the latest Wisconsin survey that was just released today.
And we want to hear from you, too, at 800-642-1234. What do you think about Wisconsin's economy right now? How would you rate it? What about the national economy? Why do you think almost half of survey respondents said Wisconsin's economy was not so good? And what about your economic status and future? Are you optimistic or pessimistic? And why? Call now at 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page.
You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Judith Sears-Poisson. Right now, we're continuing the conversation about what Wisconsin survey respondents had to say about the national economy, the state economy, and their own personal finances. We're talking with Nancy Wong from UW-Madison School of Human Ecology.
And you can help us fill out this information we collected in the survey. Put your story behind it. Call in now at 800-642-1234. What do you think of the national and state economy? Are you hopeful or are you worried? And what about your own financial situation? Do you think you're better off now than you were a year ago? Do you think you'll be better off a year from now than you are right now? Why do you think survey respondents were maybe pessimistic about Wisconsin's economy more so than they were even just last fall? Call in now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Central Time Facebook page. And Nancy, before we go to our callers, some information we've been seeing lately says housing sales are going up in Wisconsin, doing really well in some markets, prices going up. Mm-hmm. The notion that people are out there ready to make a major financial commitment like buying a house. What changes our thinking, our psychology over time on a big decision like that?
Well, again, a lot of factors that could vary from individuals to individuals. Some people actually have to move because they are moving away for jobs, for example, so they have to put the house on the market. And I know that oftentimes, I think, because of the economy, people have been actually delaying those decisions until they feel confident enough that they are going to have a job for a longer period of time, and they see that, you know, things are stabilizing, and that is probably the best indicator that people feel confident about the economy.
One point that we haven't got into in this survey yet, one of the big questions was how much opportunity is there in America today for the average person to get ahead? 43% said moderate, 27% said just a little, 14% said quite a bit. So only a few people really optimistic about economic mobility. And this is something I understand you've done some research on. What do people think about economic mobility in the U.S. in the research you've done?
Actually, I think that how people feel about the economy in terms of economic mobility really aligns with the findings that we have found in our studies. And that is also consistent with many other studies that has been reported about, I think, the U.S. economy relative to, I think, to other, I think, developed economies that it generally compares itself to. Because recent statistics really suggest that the U.S. has high absolute mobility, meaning that each generation are still continuing to do better, but then relatively speaking, they are not doing quite as well, you know, in certain sectors. For example, 42% of men born into the bottom fifth in this country ends up in the same place, meaning that only 8% of men at the bottom rose to the top percentile. So compare it to other European countries like Denmark and Sweden, where about only 25 to 28% of men born into the bottom segment remains in the same place. So we have actually, I think, twice the amount of what economists call stickiness between generations. So that is a real concern.
So if I'm hearing you right, the rags to riches story, where you go from nothing to millionaire or something like that, mm-hmm. less common here than in some European countries.
That's correct.
Let's go to our callers now, looking for your thoughts on the nation's economy, Wisconsin's economy, your own economic hopes and fears for your life. We've got Ted on the line in Beloit. Ted, hi.
Oh, how are you?
Good. What do you think, Ted?
Well, I think things are not looking up for Wisconsin. I think we're doing worse than the rest of the country. I think that Scott Walker and his plans has been more in favor of the people that have money and working people. I don't mean necessarily poor people, but working people are not our needs and wants aren't looked at.
Ted, thanks a lot for the call. And this has been a debate here in Wisconsin, Nancy, and similar things are said on the presidential campaign trail. This idea of whether or not government is looking out for people with money or working people, does that play a lot into how people think about their economy, the economy, whether they're positive or negative about it?
Yes, absolutely. I completely sympathize with, I think, Ted's feelings about the economy. And it is really true that I think the working class are the ones who probably feel the squeeze much more acutely, as I think governments have been taking away a lot of these benefits and in terms of education especially, and as well as healthcare, that some of these other factors that really goes a long way in taking away that sense of security for the middle class. Whereas because they are still working and, you know, they are not eligible for a lot of the benefits that I think the poorer segments actually gets to benefit from. But at the same time, they are finding that, you know, their take-home pay and their disposable income are increasingly being squeezed because of the higher proportion of healthcare and education bills that they have to foot.
Ted, thanks for that call. And Nancy, I've heard that there's a lot of fear among working class people who, you know, with older factory type jobs could live a middle class lifestyle. Other people just solidly in the middle class. A lot of people perceiving that the line to stay up in that middle class is getting thinner and thinner. The cushion is getting thinner and thinner. Is that something you've encountered in your research?
Oh, absolutely. Because I think it is actually almost inevitable, because if you look at, I think, salaries have remained pretty much stagnant, if not lower than, you know, from 10 years ago, for example. I mean, there is literally almost, you could say, zero income growth. And, you know, when you compare it to cost of living, especially medical and healthcare and education, all of those prices have gone up significantly, but our income has pretty much stayed the same. So it is reasonable to understand that if the bulk of your income comes from your salary, you are going to feel a squeeze, without a doubt. Yeah.
Talking to Nancy Wong, professor of consumer science at UW-Madison, looking at the results of the Wisconsin survey on economic issues. Back to our callers now with Maura in Milwaukee. Hi.
Hi.
What do you think? Go ahead, Maura.
Hello? Hello? Hello, this is Laura.
Laura, hi. Yes, you're on the air. Go ahead.
I'm sorry. I heard an echo. I'm finding that ever since Scott Walker's election, he's posed such a threat on so many people's lifelong investments financially for assuring that they can be sustainable when they are most vulnerable in retirement. He's gone after their pensions, and he's gone after their insurances and increases, and he's not just teachers, but he's gone after, restricting union securities. He's gone after, and he's proud of those things. The only problem is that he's not attracting wealthy people into the state.
All right, Laura, and I want to bring in another caller right away. Abraham is on the line in Green Bay. Abraham, hi.
Hey, I just wanted to say that we are not having a problem with a slow economy or a lack of jobs, but rather a problem with unqualified workforce. I live here in the city, and a few months ago I applied to a certain job, and I was unqualified for the job, and I know that the job is still, after I think about 3 months, open, and they're still looking for people.
All right, Abraham, thanks. A couple of perspectives there. One caller saying Scott Walker hurting the economy, putting pensions at risk, things like that. Abraham saying economy is cooking along. We don't have a qualified workforce. Nancy, as we wrap up, I want to get into the point about retirement. A lot of people uncertain. We keep seeing statistics, not much retirement income out there. Is that part of people's hopes and fears, what people are worried about in particular?
Oh, absolutely, because I guess it is a real fear if you were to look at the average retirement savings in this country, without a doubt, because many people are actually finding that they cannot afford to retire. So that is a real concern. And here, I think we are actually trying to think of ways to help people to save up enough money for retirement. But it is, unfortunately, a strategy that needs to be put in place much further in advance than that by the time you need it. So it is a real critical concern, and we need to really work towards that. And I also wanted to address, I think, Abraham's question about unqualified workforce, because that is also a very important, I think, issue that needs to address in terms of helping us with our future economic mobility, is to making sure that we put in the investment in re-educating the workforce so that they would be able to take advantage of those opportunities as our economy improves.
Laura and Abraham, thanks for your calls. And Nancy Wong, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
That's Nancy Wong, professor of consumer science in the School of Human Ecology at UW-Madison. She joined us to look at the state and national economy as seen in the spring 2016 Wisconsin survey. Tomorrow morning on the Joy Cardine Show, find out more about the survey results, including a look at how the state is doing overall, not just the economy. We'll cover some more survey results tomorrow afternoon on Central Time. You can read the whole survey over at WPR.org. It's the biggest show in Wisconsin, maybe the biggest outdoor music festival in the world, Summerfest, in Milwaukee in late June and early July, and the lineup of bands is settling into place.
The Harley-Davidson stage just released their lineup today with names like L. King, Nelly, Umphrey's McGee, and Wisconsin's Own Garbage on the list.
And speaking of Wisconsin's Own, Milwaukee legends The Violent Femmes are scheduled to play after surprising fans over the last year with the release of new material. I talked to bass player Brian Ritchie last summer. He said the band originally had a hard time getting shows anywhere but on the Milwaukee sidewalks because the rock clubs, the punk scene, didn't know what to make of this band that just played acoustic instruments.
But then we were playing out on the street as a result of being kicked out of a club when we tried to audition. We were so dejected that we went to play for the people waiting in line for the Pretenders concert. And the Pretenders heard us and invited us to open up the show because they loved us. And, that kind of Well, it vindicated us, at least to ourselves, to know that we were on the right track.
That's Brian Ritchie from the Violent Femmes talking to Central Time last year. The band is playing Summerfest this year, according to new lineup info just out today.
We'll go out with the Violent Femmes here on Central Time.